Okay, members, we'll get started. We have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. Somebody who has not moved minutes yet this session, I think Representative Kiffmeyer moves the minutes of April 28th, having reviewed them very carefully. Any discussion, any changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Oh, okay, we've got April 28th. We also need a motion on the minutes for April 27th. Representative Moran moves the minutes of April 27th after having carefully reviewed them. And shall I quiz you on them? Or
No,
I won't do that. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes of April 27th are adopted. Members, just to give you kind of a path, how many meetings do we have left now? Two? This one and one tomorrow. So, I mean, we're kind of winding down this committee, and I want to thank all of the members for their participation. We are starting off today with House File 1018. Representative Zellers, welcome to the committee. And I will move that House File 1018 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Welcome to the committee, Speaker Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee. I have a handout that be distributed for members about my bill, and my bill is actually carrying forth on a commitment that I made along with Representative Pepin and Representative, there was quite a few of us in the northwest suburbs that said that once our hospital, Maple Grove Hospital bill was passed, one of the concerns brought up by Senator Berglund was the accessibility of healthcare, mental health care beds in the metropolitan area, but also statewide. We made a commitment at that point in time when we were building our new hospital that we would continue to address this issue, that we would not, once we got what we wanted, we would forget about the commitments, or we would do what we could, but then, always later on there's things get in the way. This is not only a commitment on that, but it's also a commitment to the kids in not only the metropolitan area, but statewide, in a need that is still out there. So this is asking for an exemption from the moratorium for 50 new beds, increase of 20 in for not only statewide, but the facility that is in my district, in my backyard, just recently opened and is providing some much-needed help to many of our young children across the metropolitan area, but also statewide. The commitment from our standpoint is not only for ages 12 to 18, but also under 18. This is a bed for children, or excuse me, facility for children and adolescents. So, unfortunate growing need that is across the state, but also in the metropolitan area, and making sure that these beds and this care is accessible right here in Minnesota, that did not have to travel to outstate or outside of our Minnesota boundaries. So, very simple bill, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the commitment. Having a hearing and member support. Be ready for any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Representative Zellers. Members, any discussion, questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zellers, I don't know if anybody from the department was going to testify on the bill, but if not, I just wanted to ask you, where they are on this.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Liebling. They have not, to the best of my knowledge, I have folks here from, both Prairie Care, the facility in my district, but also available. I do not know. I'm assuming that they were, I can find out for you. We did not have planned testimony from them, though. But it is a need. Just on background, a need that was assessed 2 years ago, and there has been no, what I would call, significant or even really I don't think any new movement on bed space or bed capacity added. So any need or assessment that was done 2 years ago hasn't really changed much in the last 2 years. That's a quick background I can give you on that, Representative Liebling.
Okay, so Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zeller. So you haven't had any opposition to this at all from anybody?
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Liebling. No, the companion bill is over in the Senate. There have been some questions in the Senate about the need and the public interest review. But as I said, it was done 2 years ago and at a cost of $25,000 for the review. And with no marketable change, so there's not been a huge expansion or contraction. That need probably just isn't. The cost to the employer, or excuse me, to the provider would be borne out then. Again, if there's no real change, that was a concern that was raised. I don't think it was an objection, though.
Thanks.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also in regards to that, I appreciate the fact that I remember being here when this had extensive, many hearings and hours of testimony. And so I think certainly when the commissioners already conducted this and status being what it is, I am sure this sort of a bill did not go unnoticed and that they would be here if they thought there were any question. But that would be basically undoing their own evaluation already and stated need and interest. So I think it's been well vetted, well heard, and we're following through here as we should. Thank you for bringing it.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zellers, I'm just curious, what was the rationale of the moratorium to begin with in the last legislature?
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McDonald, the repealing a moratorium on hospitals, whether it be mental health or just general use beds, is a debate that's been here as long as the actually probably anybody on the committee. The moratorium, and not being a healthcare expert, I will put my little pinky toe into the water here, but the moratorium was set up so that some hospitals that were starting and were beginning were not going to be then either put out of business or kind of priced out of business by hospitals outside maybe their core cities, having that then have somebody out in Maple Grove or Robbinsdale or Woodwinds, down Woodbury, someplace like that, that would then take business away from inner city hospitals. We've had this debate many times about repealing the moratorium as a whole, but I think that bill, Representative Westrum, usually carries that bill. I don't know if he's got it in this year, but it's one that if introduced again, I will re-sign on to as well.
Representative McDonald?
Very good, thank you.
Very good. Representative Hosh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on this issue, I was one of the few that actually voted against the bed expansion that we had a few years ago. And I think this is particularly the wrong direction to go. And it's not because we don't need more capacity in our mental health system. It's where we need that capacity. And inpatient services are the most expensive, intensive mental health services that we have. And outpatient, more mid-level, community-based services is what we need. I think if we put our efforts in there, in that area, we will release the availability of inpatient beds. We will have a system that I think is better for the patient and for the communities and for families. And hopefully that we'll be providing it in a way that is cheaper in the long run. Too many times we focus on the inpatient part, and I don't know if that's because it's the most profitable part for systems. Most of the time mental health services, you lose money regardless, but I think focusing on expanding inpatient services is the wrong direction. We should be looking at outpatient services. It's not as costly. I think it will open up the backflow when it comes to available hospital beds. It's not, I'm not against the bill's intentions because I think the intentions are good. I just think they're misdirected, and I'll be voting no on because of that and just continuing my opposition from the previous inpatient expansion that we had. And that was, it's bipartisan because both bills were, one was authored by a DFLer and one by a GOPer, so it has nothing to do with partisanship. It's just my philosophy, and we should be focusing on more mid-level outpatient services.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will be voting yes. In my experience, I have constituents whose children have been sent to Montana for beds because of the bed shortage. And also, we did have, in my own district, Faribault, we did have a large facility where we did have inpatient. We closed that, the Wilson Center, years ago. and not that many years ago, but we lost all those beds. So I understand, you know, the need for all treatment of, you know, from the ground on up, but we do not need to be sending our kids to Montana when we can send them to your facility. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Appreciate your comments, Representative Fritz. Representative Hosh, you know, with respect, I agree with you, but more outpatient, less inpatient isn't ideal. But my understanding is there is a need for additional inpatient mental health beds in the Twin Cities area. And so that's my understanding for why this is coming before us. Members, any other questions, discussion? Are there other people interested in testifying on the bill? Representative Liebling, if there is anybody, just real quickly, anybody else who wants to testify on the bill, if they could make their way down to the testifying table, I'd appreciate it. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's what kind of what I was going to say. I mean, that's why it would be helpful to have, is I'm not sure if it's the Department of Health. I think it is. I'm glad Ms. Abderholden is going to testify on it, but I'm just kind of surprised that the department isn't going to give us a word about any position on the bill because, I mean, or to tell us they don't have a position on the bill, I guess. But because this is a little more complicated than meets the eye, and, you know, I mean, I'm not seeing any reason to oppose the bill personally, and so I expect I'll vote for it. But, you know, that it would be nice to have their expertise here just to kind of tell us where things are now in terms of, you know, what the need is across the state and give us kind of the expertise there. So I'm kind of disappointed we don't have that today.
Representative Liebling, I'm a little surprised myself, although I would point out we post our agenda and look at that, we have one here just like that. Very good. Mr. Pollack, I think, was working to get them here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Stefan Gildemeister. I'm assistant director in the health economics program, and it was our program that typically is involved in conducting the public interest reviews. Happy to answer any questions that you have. If you have a specific question or like me to clarify some background on the moratorium and sort of what has been done in the past.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I don't want to take a lot of time on this. I'm sure the chair wants to move to other bills as well, but you know, maybe you could just give a brief explanation of why there's been a moratorium, and if you could just tell us, does the department have a position on this bill?
Mr. Gildemeister.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, the moratorium has been in place in Minnesota since the early 80s, and it really has prohibited expansion of hospitals and hospital bed capacity, licensed bed capacity, because of concerns of for overexpansion of inpatient bed capacity, expensive inpatient bed capacity. One of the weaknesses of the moratorium has been, and since the moratorium has been in place there, the legislature has passed about 24 exceptions to the moratorium, some broad and some fairly narrow, focused on individual projects to expand capacity. One of the weaknesses of that moratorium has been typically that fairly little information is available to assist the legislature in making their decision as to whether or not to grant an exception. So in 2004, the legislature passed a requirement that applicants provide a report to the Department of Health for the purpose of MDH to review such project and determine whether it's in the public interest or not. The recommendation from the department is just that. The legislature retains the final authority over whether or not to pass an exception. Just briefly, we've conducted, and I think it's been mentioned before, we've conducted a review on a project in 2007 for a hospital in Woodbury, Minnesota. That project was considered a larger project, encompassing about 144 beds. At that point, our review found that it was not in the public interest. Later on, then the legislature worked with the applicant, Prairie Care, today, to pass an exception for a project that is smaller, and I think that's the project that is now being viewed for amendment. I should say you'd ask whether the department has a position. You know, we don't have a position on this bill for two reasons. We see our role as really being a neutral entity to review projects when they become when they come before the legislature, and we try to be neutral so that when you consider to ask us to conduct a review, that we have not been sort of biased or presented sort of a gut reaction to a project. We also don't know that much about this proposal in front of you. So, given that the legislature decided in the last time around to pass an exception without a review, we felt, and given that the legislature ultimately holds the authority to pass a review again, we just felt that there was no need for us to have a particular perspective on the bill one way or the other.
Okay, Ms. Abderholden, if you want to introduce yourself to the committee again and then proceed with your testimony, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I just want to say that you might not know it, but today is actually Children's Mental Health Day. And so it's kind of opportune time that you are hearing this bill. What we do know is that if we identify children early, if we have good diagnostic assessments, if we provide evidence-based treatment, you know, we catch things early, that often they don't need hospitalization. Many of the reforms that you all passed, and many of you passed in 2007, mental health crisis teams, schooling to mental health services, we've actually been able to show that we're preventing hospitalizations, which is a good thing. I would be remiss if I didn't say that I know several of you are on the conference committee, and to be honest, the Senate bill eliminates about 60, closer to 70% of all the children's mental health grants, and so we will, in fact, need new hospital beds if we're eliminating whole programs, including schooling to mental health services. Because it's Children's Mental Health Day, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration released a new report today saying that 8% of youth ages 12 to 17 experienced at least one major depressive episode last year, but only a little over 30% received treatment. So we know when we don't provide treatment to children, they end up getting much, much more ill and needing hospitalization. So NAMI is not, we're not really speaking against the bill at this point, because we do believe that if we see this kind of cuts in services, we will in fact need more hospital beds. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Is there anybody else wishing to testify? If not, members, any further discussion? Any further discussion? Representative Humphrey.
Well, Mr. Chair, I had a question. What is the age limit for the patients that are admitted to this?
Representative Zellers.
Under 21.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say then that as I go around talking to various college presidents, they're very concerned about depression in their students. It's becoming a very large issue in a lot of our colleges, and this facility then could obviously help with that.
Great. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why do, you know, do I call you Speaker Zellers or Representative Zellers?
Call me whatever you want, Glenn.
Duly noted.
maybe for the record, we'll hold off on some of those ones from college.
Yeah, right, okay. Why do we have a situation? Do all states have a situation where they have to come to the state legislature to decide whether they can expand beds? What's the rationale why they have to come to the state to add additional bed if they believe this is a private hospital, private money? They can decide if they want to build additional beds. That's, you know, I don't know. The medication I took today is telling me to say that. No. But it just seems rational to me, okay? So what is the rationale why they have to come to the legislature?
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Grunhagen, a discussion, I don't know if you were in the room when we had this on hospital moratoriums, Representative McDonald actually asked the same question. And it was put in place a few years ago before almost all of our time here at the legislature. To make sure that we didn't overbuild or over promise, and then have to go back and either close some facilities or have created an undue burden on one community that another can't bear. So I'm with you on that, and maybe the time has come. I think every year, Representative Huntley, Abler, Gottwalt, as part of the healthcare group, has the discussion on hospital moratoriums, and I think it'll probably continue, but I wasn't here when it was put in place. I'm always up for reviewing laws that were placed a long time ago, but from my perspective, we're playing with the game that we have right now, and that requires us to come back and ask for permission. So we're here asking not only the committee's permission, but hopefully that this passes through and the governor signs it for our facility.
Thank you, Representative Gruthagen.
Very good.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers.
I apologize. I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Abler and Huntley. We're here. And again, as I said when I started, this is a commitment we made when we built the Maple Grove Hospital to continue to address this problem of mental health. And to Representative Hosh, I didn't have a chance to respond. I agree with you. The Prairie Care facility in our area has actually added 60 slots for the daytime or the outpatient treatment. That's one of the components. That's why I'm a big proponent of not only their facility, but all care as well. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's all right. I will renew my motion that House File 1018 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Zellers.
Thank you, members of the committee.
The next bill on our agenda, members, is House File 637, Representative Drazkowski. We have other names for you, too, Representative. No. All good.
You haven't
All
held
of
back.
Them are
You
good.
Haven't held back before, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. I'll make the motion that House File 637 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, Representative Drazkowski. I understand you have a DE5 amendment to offer.
I do, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I have a DE5 amendment and then would like to offer an oral amendment maybe after adoption, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The DE5 amendment, and I assume everybody's got it in front of them, is an amendment that was reached in discussion with both the Department of Health and the County Health Services folks. It's a compromise from where we were before and in current law. Representative Abler, it does narrow the bill from what it was before, as you suggested, and we remove the portion on public facilities or local municipally owned facilities, so that part is out of the amendment. We still do have portion in there on churches, so we strengthen the church portion. We included the educational piece for churches, and you'll see there is additional strengthening language around the exemption for school concession stands that the department has offered, as well as the same strengthening language on the end of actually page 3, the very end of the bill, Mr. Chair. That's the amendment.
Very good. Members, any questions or discussion on the DE5 amendment? Representative Abler.
Well, Mr. Representative Drazkowski, with the kind of work you did in this bill, I think you're in the training farm league for this committee someday. And if you play your cards right, you could be here as one of the participants and do more of this kind of stuff. I think you'd think that'd be great.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I'm from a farm, and this
Representative
one doesn't resemble
Drazkowski.
One.
This is a fun committee, though. If you ever decide to join it, we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you. Okay, members, any further discussion of the DE5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the DE5 amendment is adopted. And Representative Drazkowski, do you now want to offer your oral amendment? And by the way, I want to take a moment to thank you for working on this. I know it was a good idea that wasn't quite ready for prime time before, and you've gone behind the scenes and done some good work to fix it up. So with that, do you want to offer your oral amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think, members, you have the oral amendment in front of you, but we'll present it orally, and that is, Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 32, delete meals and insert food served at. And then Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 35, after organizations, insert at the state or county fairs or to faith-based organizations. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 36, to delete the words for events. And that would be the oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, you've done the courtesy again of handing this out in writing as well so that you all have it in front of you. Any questions? No. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I think I didn't quite get what we're doing. Could we redo that?
Representative Draskowski, do you want to walk through the amendment one more time and maybe give us a little explanation of what the changes do?
I will, Mr. Chair. Let me turn to the right page here. Mr. Chair, the first part of the amendment strikes the word meals and replaces it with food served at. So actually, Representative Liebling, the word meals there is somewhat redundant of the language on 1.14 of the bill, and this was these were all brought to me by the department, these particular items here, and this is part of the agreement with them. And then line 2, page 35, to insert after organizations at state and county fairs or faith-based organizations. We had heard feedback from the state fair specifically that they were concerned about the faith-based organizations at the state fair being treated differently than the rest of them, and the county health department folks had the same concerns with county fairs, where they do many times make trips to the county fairs for inspections, and wanted to have them treated the same as well. So that's what that represents. And then the words, I believe, for events were not necessary is what I understand there, Representative Liebling.
Okay. Representative Liebling?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Draskowski. I had a little distraction here next to me, so thank you.
I know the feeling, Representative Liebling. Very good. Members, any further discussion to the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the oral amendment is adopted. And Representative Draskowski, to your bill as amended.
Well, members, Mr. Chair, this bill does focus in quite a great deal on, as I mentioned in my introductory comments, on the churches, and we saw again affectionately called the Church Ladies Bill, and Representative Fritz is as excited as I am about this bill. But this does begin to, and I was talking with Colleen from the Ms. Paulus from the department beforehand, and one of the things that this does is in this area, maybe incrementally anyway, moves us from really the full regulatory approach that we're trying in some of these community areas to one that that institutes some of this education, which I and I think others would argue even provides for greater protection of public health than the current attempt at regulatory efforts that we're doing, which as we know is not going to be long-term sustainable either as we look at a variety of areas of government. But this does it very incrementally and is acceptable to the department and other stakeholders, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank you, Representative Draskowski, as being one of those people. I was a serving committee coordinator for my church, and there are lots of folks out there, just regular people doing good things for difficult times, say funerals or fellowship things and a lot of that, and to make their life just a little bit easier. You know, the faith-based organizations, the patriotic organizations, the sportmen, these are just the heart of the Minnesota hot dish crowd, and whatever they serve is always given a great deal of love and care, and I know their desire too in regards to being diligent about compliance. So I'm really appreciative of this. This is the kind of things that in the daily life of regular Minnesotans, this lifting a bit of the burden on some of these mandates and clearing the way for them is really, really helpful, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, other discussion of the bill? Does anybody here want to testify on the bill? If anybody wants to testify, this is your opportunity. I'm not seeing anybody. And I'm seeing one person who really wants to talk on this bill right now, Representative McDonald.
Well, since we have a light schedule, I do thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Drazkowski. I, too, want to opine my satisfaction with this bill, just because it is very important with the small town or any town event. One fear that the 4th of July in Delano always had, because we have the largest and oldest 4th of July parade in the state of Minnesota on July 4th, is the fear that our concession stand, our food stand, that's run by the Chamber of Commerce and Lions Club and all other great organizations, that might get shut down because of the hard, stringent state's mandates or laws under the auspice of food safety. And this does alleviate some of that fear, and of course it's a good thing for all organizations, and it builds community spirit. So I appreciate letting me just give a little editorial, and thank you for presenting this bill.
Well, Representative McDonald, under the austerity proceedings here at the legislature, we're going to have to charge you time for that advertising for Delano, and I think actually Representative Murphy wanted equal time, but Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just for the record, I like pie.
Okay, further discussion to the bill, as amended. All right, seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 637 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is passed and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Easy for me to say. Welcome, Representative McFarland. I'm sorry, Representative Abler.
Well, I was just wondering why it went to Ways and Means. Is there money in here, or is there relieved of a fee or something? Or
can I phone a helpline?
I was just puzzled.
I'm not sure. That was the instruction.
I think it'd be a better place to send it.
Okay. Apparently, there was some money involved, Representative Abler. Right. Some money that comes out of a special revenue fund for it, so it needs to go to Ways and Means.
It's a fitting track.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
I have a note. You mentioned here this is informational only, correct?
Yes. If we're moving on to House File 1579, Representative McFarland is here to present this. This is for information only. My understanding is it's moving along a different track, but there was a desire to have this heard and discussed in this committee, and I want to thank Representative McFarland for recognizing that and giving us the opportunity to discuss it here in the Health and Human Services Reform Committee. Representative McFarland, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Since we're not really moving the bill, if you want to go speak to House File 1579, the floor is yours.
And just to let you know, I'm also in jobs, and so I may have to be pulled out, but these guys will be able to take over if I can't be here.
Good.
First of all, I want to thank you for letting me be here. This is about House File 1579, the first engrossment, the Minnesota Accountable Government Innovation and Collaboration Act, also known as MAGIC. And it's been a really great bill to be carrying. This bill creates a framework within which government will harness the creative potential of state and county professionals by encouraging them to create a new business models that enhance the provision of government services in Minnesota in ways that can be tested, measured, and replicated. Just a little background about how we got here. Last year, Representative Marquardt, myself, Representative Erdahl, and Loeffler were co-chairs of the Redesign Caucus. During the interim, we had people respond with some RFPs on ideas for redesign and innovation in the state. A lot of public, private, nonprofit, and individuals came to us with some ideas, and throughout this year, our caucus has been listening to these ideas, and we have a lot more that have come forward we just haven't had time to hear. The counties then stepped forward, and I'm just so impressed because after they gave their presentation to the Redesign Caucus, the energy started to build. And, of course, I don't know if you've heard Tony Murphy from Beltrami County talk or not, but he also inspired a lot of people. The counties also brought this forward to their joint conference with cities and school boards, and the energy really grew from that point. Now, there was a lot of talk, and a lot of people brought ideas, but we brought this to action. And I want to thank Representative Marquardt, the county's Deb Dyson and Mark Shepard from the research department too, because they really helped us to create this. And I also want to mention on this bill that we are going to be removing the third article because it has now been replaced by House File 1599, which is the North Star Council. That's going to lead a little bit more work and has some money involved in it, and so we are going to be carrying that separately. And with that, I'd like to proceed and have the members from the Association of Minnesota Counties speak.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Jeff Spartz. I am from the Association of Minnesota Counties. We thank you for the opportunity to be here. We think the bill, as described by Representative Farland provides an opportunity for counties to serve as laboratories for the state in the development of new ways of delivering services. This bill is not intended to change outcomes that are created by the legislature. It's primarily directed at improving the methodology for delivering those outcomes, making them more efficient and more effective, and recognizing the fact that at the local level, communities differ, delivery systems should differ to meet those needs, and if this is passed and adopted into law, it's going to give counties an opportunity to rapidly prototype new and better ways of delivering services, and I certainly look forward to that day. I think there'll be a great deal of excitement at the local level. Joel Matthews from AMC is also here. He is one of the, he's been the honcho on this project for the last year or two, and he can go through the bill in great detail for anybody that needs to ask us questions.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you.
Just a quick reminder to the audience, if you have cell phones on, you might want to turn them off. It does mess up our audio system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I'll add a few accolades before we begin as well. Representative Abler and Thiessen and others last biennium were actually instrumental in helping us enact the service delivery authority statutes, which kind of helped, I think, encourage us and give us some bravery moving forward as well to be a little more bold in our proposals. And working with McFarland and others, we really feel that we've been able to continue to travel down that path. The bill really has two articles that may be of interest to this committee. The first article basically turns our counties from just an administrative arm of the state into a full-service local government. One of the things we've heard from our county administrators on a regular basis is if a constituent or a citizen comes to the county board with a concern or a question, frequently they find themselves saying, well, we know what the answer is, we know how we can help you, but we're not authorized by the state to do that. And this Article 1 really only allows us to act in the case that the state, the federal government, the cities, or the towns of the area really haven't carved out that territory. So it doesn't give us any preemption authority, but there are areas of the state, areas of government that really are kind of left in no man's land. And this way we don't have to come and seek enabling legislation for every small project or problem that we have. And right now you'll notice year to year there are various county enabling statutes that we ask to have brought forward. And this will actually help speed that up to some degree. The second article, which is really the heart of the MAGIC Act, is actually a waiver process, or really, as we'd say, it's a framework, as Mr. Spartz just said, to really fast-track a prototype or a pilot project. We thought, based upon the discussions with our folks and others, that one of the ways that we could encourage counties to innovate, and one of the ways our county boards and administrators told us they would be incented to innovate, is to provide for them an option where if they're willing to do that work on the front end, develop a business plan, to work with the state to collaborate on the outcomes and the performance measures, that they'd be able to try that out on a limited basis. And then rather than bringing the legislature a pilot project saying, well, if we do this, it might work out this way, they could actually come back and bring the legislature in on the review side to say, this is what we've tried for 12 to 36 months, and these are the results that we've seen, and you know it'll either be successful or it won't. And frankly, we believe that in government we need to be a little bit more bold and try some things and push our boundaries a little bit. Not every pilot that a county may try may be successful, but we believe it's important that we learn from our successes and failures alike. If it is successful, it gives us an opportunity in a faster cycle time to actually get that information out across the state and improve business practices. If it's not successful, it allows us to learn so that another county in another part of the state won't try the same thing or will try it differently. And if you'd like, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to walk through the detailed process, or if you'd rather just have us open it up for questions, I can do that as well, depending on how much detail you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. I think perhaps we could open it up for questions at this point. I know I have one. Representative McFarland.
I'd like to add a thing. We do have an amendment that's going to be added to this, and I thought I should at least mention that before the questions start, so it'll alleviate some potential questions. We have three amendments. One is to not to satisfy, but the NRI had concerns about Section 1, and we have worked things out with them. So I know some people have received emails, and that issue has been taken care of, so don't worry about it. We have some language in here that it was added that will be useful language for AFSCME and the employers. And also we have some language that NAMI had brought forward, and we are adding to make sure the stakeholders are involved. So just wanted to add that before the questions.
Very good. Thank you, Representative McFarland. One question I had is around the scope of county government. I mean, as I read this bill, I kind of looked at it and thought, was this... I love the idea. I really do. I want to thank Representative McFarland and the others who've worked on this issue over the years to try to bring some reforms, if you will, to the way we're delivering services at the local level. But is this an expansion of county government, or does it make way for an expansion of county government?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Matthews.
Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question, because we actually had the same question asked in the local government committee. We really believe that the way to right-size government, if that's the term that folks want to use, is to really empower folks at the local level to decide what the current or what the correct level of government is. You know, as elected officials, the county boards are going to be held to a pretty high standard to make sure that they're not finding themselves on mission creep. But if I can give you a for instance, Tony Murphy in Beltrami County had given the example that they're involved in a pilot project right now that's being funded by foundations called Students First Initiative. It's basically a partnership between the city, the school, and the county to provide youth with mentors to try and boost the graduation rate. In that case, if it goes as planned, as they expect, they'll be able to increase the graduation rate, which will actually decrease the costs on the other programs and services, whether it's corrections or human services or others, for those students. Now, in the event that the pilot ends, under current law, the county wouldn't be authorized to carry their load or their contribution to make that program go into the future. And so, to some extent, we actually see this as a way to allow us to partner on a greater level with other local governments, with the goal being it's a way for us to find greater efficiencies moving forward.
Members, other questions? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I think those were some of my concerns as well. It kind of reminds me of Representative Drazkowski's bill that had, you know, really, really a lot of good things in it, but ran into those concerns. And he came back today and narrowed the scope, limited it, and did some things with it that I think were very constructive, and as a result, it, you know, was a lot further. And I know that that's the purpose of an informational hearing in regards. So as I read through all of this, I do get concerned about some of the broad latitude and some of the scope and some of the issues that are in here that I, again, laudable goal, without question, effort being put into it. But I just see a lot of concerns here that I don't know. I think the idea of the innovation, all those kind of things, of looking at things differently, but there seems to be a fair amount of authority that goes with it, and then also another council that, you know, kind of reminds me of the Metropolitan Council and some of these other ones. And it isn't that they start out, everybody starts out with the best intentions and a lot more, but then other things seem to happen along the way. So I just have several layers of concerns in regards to here, and so I would hope you would take those into consideration and work to keep your goals in mind, and but maybe consider the possibility of a little more limited or broader, and because I think there is a fair amount right now in regards to some of the latitude that they can have as a county, and so I just want to give you that kind of input to help you know that that's the direction I think that would be very helpful, so that we can, you know, get towards the goals you want to get to. All right. Thank you.
Well, and realizing this is not a state government or government operations committee, I don't want to get too far afield, but Mr. Matthews.
And just to that point, the third article with the council in it is going to be removed tomorrow morning on Lanning's committee, and that's something that, you know, if we were to get, I don't want to go too far afield from this committee's jurisdiction, but, you know, we do believe strongly in the idea of creating a state strategic plan. I think there are other folks that are interested in that as well. And so that's something that I think we're going to try and look at over the interim, but I just wanted to be clear that that piece is being removed. And then to your other point about the broadness or the possible perceived expansion of county authority, one thing that we've seen in looking at literature from across the country is that local governments that have more flexibility tend to be more efficient. And part of it has to do with the fact that you have more opportunity to try different ways to innovate. You know, you may not realize that currently townships and cities have more of a general authority than your county does. And so that provides them some opportunity that we think, frankly, counties being in their role could really benefit from as well to pass those benefits to their citizens.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate hearing those good comments as well. But I also would say that I, when I heard this bill being discussed originally, though, is that Article 3 was being separated, but not for the purpose of eliminating it, but for the purpose of bringing it through as a separate standalone bill. Maybe there's clarification to that, which would be helpful.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Matthews.
I don't want to speak for Representative McFarland, but I believe she was indicating that that's something that we are going to pursue probably over the interim with hopes of bringing something back next session. But I don't want to speak for her, but that's my understanding of her intent.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Matthews. I think the other thing is that, without question, I think we have, in a variety of ways, whether it's county or private citizens, I mean, when we have a bill on the one we just dealt with, I mean, I think we're finding this in many ways the burdensome thing. And so within the county structure, I know that Representative Drazkowski, others as well, have worked on any way which we can, without sacrificing public safety or other issues that are important, to lift those mandates and give you more freedom within regards to that. So thank you much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me those comments.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Matthews. I've always been a big advocate for giving counties more flexibility to test out new models. But sometimes we let so many flowers bloom, we start to lose track of how do they work together. And we did pass the Service Delivery Authority, and we have an advisory group, and we have a process, and sometimes I think that one got a little too bureaucratic, but that is still just kind of getting launched. And the description of the MAGIC Act sounds a lot like the goals of that, and yet there's a limit here on 10 pilots per agency, et cetera. Can you tell me, how do you see these two things working together? Will this potentially supersede that process? It's complementary. You expect DHS to do both?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Matthews.
Thank you for the question, Representative Loeffler. We really see this as a supplement to what's happening with the Service Delivery Authority. It's the way we envision this. Some of our counties already today are looking at the Service Delivery Authority model, and they're going to go ahead and move forward with that. Other counties may have an idea for a business model that might work, that they want to try only on a temporary basis. The Service Delivery Authority allows for a permanent change and permanent performance measures to be put in place. And so we see this as a way to generate some experience for counties that maybe aren't sure if an SDA is right for them. They can figure out whether they need to go through that structural change or whether or not the process mandates that they're looking at reviewing can just be reworked within the framework where they exist currently. And so I think for us, there's a pretty clear line between a permanent structural fix, which they can seek during the Service Delivery Authorities, and the MAGIC Act, which is really just a chance to try something out on a limited basis. And then if that does work, we expect that to feed into the Service Delivery Authority system. That said, the council that you mentioned that's setting the performance measures, we think that's going to generate some great ideas and information for folks to potentially build into some of these MAGIC pilots as well. So we kind of see it almost as a cycle feeding around, hopefully continuing to encourage counties to innovate and reinvent themselves as they go forward. But we do see it as a symbiotic relationship.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Matthews. Actually, I'm hoping that they will evolve into no need for these kind of things, because I think once we get the performance and outcome measures established and endorsed, then I think we should allow counties some real flexibility in terms of how they achieve those, as long as there's the appropriate, you know, due process safeguards and accountability and all those other sorts of things. But, you know, it's an evolving process, so we'll see. But that was the other concern as I had, is sometimes the rules and regulations are like one size doesn't fit all. And I was wondering why you limited it to that there can be no more than one pilot of a particular type, or that, you know, they have to all be unique. And I'm wondering if you had, you know, two scarcely populated rural areas who both wanted to do something similar about trying to figure out how to improve the opportunities available, and they're in different parts of the state, why wouldn't you let both of them experiment with a different delivery system, because they both want to be innovative?
Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the reasons why we wanted to limit the similarity of the pilot projects is because we didn't want to see a number of counties, you know, we didn't want to see 10 counties all go down the same road without taking the opportunity to try to learn from some experience first. I think the other concern, based on some conversations with some of the governor's staff, is that we also didn't want this to become a backdoor way to basically have 87 counties all try something on a pilot basis and basically change the entire system at once. I think maybe you could argue we're being overly cautious in that we want to let one county go at a time. That said, we do, I believe, provide, or our intent is to provide, if a group of counties wanted to try a pilot together, theoretically they can do that. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to see multiple pilots trying to tackle the same issue without taking the opportunity to learn. And that's, I think, just something that came out of the discussions we had with our folks, as well as with others that were interested, to try and make sure that we were being really deliberate and learning from what was happening, not just trying the same thing over 10 times in a row without taking the opportunity to review what had happened.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think we ought to, you know, we can go forward and go slow, but I just think so oftentimes people see what are happening in other similar states, and it's really not about reinventing the wheel with a new creative idea. It's actually just adopting a process that might work better for their type of county that's already been established, but they need this kind of a framework in order to get out from under the current "you shall do it this way." And so I'm hoping that as this evolves, we'll get more flexibility for people to do that, because I do think there are proven models that are just a little different than what we've kind of made as our plain vanilla approach, and we got to let people try those out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews, and to the counties, and to Representative McFarland, who had to go to another committee, as I understand, and Representative Abler.
Oh, thanks. I'm not going to another committee, but I have a question. I appreciate what you're doing here. We, in the omnibus bill, we kind of beefed up the Service Delivery Authority with a little more flexibility, but that's focused mostly on the human and social service niche, and there's like 20-something jobs they have or in that part. I think the advice Representative Loeffler is offering is something you might want to consider as this bill moves, even, I don't know how far you plan to get it this year or where it's going to go. You don't really have to only have one of a kind or two, and who says that that's just the same? Maybe the department says, oh, well, we already have something like that. But I think for the two groups that benefit by this, the counties that don't want to do an SDA, for some reason that makes sense, they just didn't feel like joining one, they could do some innovation. But those counties that want to do non-human service type functions, snow plowing or whatever else that might dawn on them to try. But I'm a strong believer in the fact that the county board structure is itself inherently accountable to the people who care about it. And the state is not the only entity that has an interest in if counties do well. In fact, sometimes that's a meddlesome responsibility, which I think we've kind of echoed here. And some of it's none of our darn business about how Broward County wants to do its stuff. But I think the people who live there, who elect those commissioners and the staff who work there for the good men and women on the board, are the accountability. And so I for one, would think that I would encourage you to be a little even more flexible. And maybe this is what you do so far, but don't be the least bit shy to ask us to give you more flexibility, which I think, given the times and
the challenges that counties are under, and as their mission is to serve their people. I think that's it's a safe bet, and you have to trust the locals. So thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
I'll extend my thanks again as well. I think at the outset of this committee, we talked about trying to look at big ideas and ways of doing things differently, and this strikes me as one of those kinds of things, especially in the area of human services, that we need more of. So I'm looking forward to seeing the results of this kind of pilot, and I expect there will be good things to share, and then we can spread it across the state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, again, this bill 1579 was before us for information only, so we're not taking any action on it. Tomorrow is our last meeting, so you know, if you have any practical jokes or things you want to share, or you know, whatever you want to do together, tomorrow's kind of the last time for us to do it. But we'll be gathering at 2:30 again in this room, and there being nothing else before the committee, we stand adjourned.